Up that microphone, all right?
Well, thank you very much, Reverend Martin, for the words of welcome and for the opportunity to give a personal word of testimony. Some of you may wonder what a word of testimony is, but in simple terms, or my terms, it's my life story, with the crucial addition that being when I became a Christian or when I got saved. I have to say tonight, I thought it was a very clever idea of mine to come up to the pulpit early, to put my glasses on, to have a good look around, to see who was here tonight. Not so sure that was such a good idea, but we'll see how this evening goes. But I want to say a special word of welcome to many of my bank colleagues who I see tonight, both current and former, who have come along to support me this evening. I really appreciate that. I used to think that when I compared my life story to the Reverend Martin's, mine was pretty dull. But it was the same God speaking in the jail cell to him as it was on a Sunday night in my life in Gilnahirk. I did find trimming my testimony down very difficult. I cut about 600 words out this afternoon. I thought I was doing well. And I was thinking the Reverend Martin has three testimony nights set aside. Maybe it'd be easier if I just did all three. Colin McKee suggested I could bring a calendar up into the pulpit rather than a clock. Other words of encouragement just to help you along. It has been many years since I gave my testimony in church. The last time was a New Year's Eve service, a watch night service. And just to give you the date for that, I was driving a Mark II Golf GTI for any of the car enthusiasts among you to work that out. But I was born on the 18th of November 1967 as Robert Moore Hamilton in the Cottage Hospital in Ballymena. So to see if you're working that all out, yes, I turned 56 last Saturday. My mum warned me not to make any comments about trying to guess my age, so I've stuck with that. It is lovely to see my fan club here this evening. It's a very exclusive fan club, just the two members, and that's my mum and dad. It was typical of my mum, as we walked along Tremor Beach on Friday morning, that I said to her that I'd narrowed my pages down on them to four pages, and she was absolutely horrified and said, "You're not speaking about us for four pages." Dad was a Belfast man. Mum was originally brought up in Glenorm, but as a young child moved to Ballymena. Dad was a civil servant, and when he met Mum, he worked for the Department of Agriculture. I think from Dad's stories, he really enjoyed that job, driving along in a grey Austin van, delivering men's wages to different parts of County Tyrone. Mum worked for the Trustee Savings Bank, and they met in the bank in Omagh. They got married and settled in Omagh, and providentially, the next door neighbour attended a new church called Omagh Free Presbyterian Church, and Mum took the neighbour's advice and started attending. And there was a young student minister in charge of the work, and that was the late the Reverend Ken Elliott. And whilst I have no memories at all of him as a child, one thing that always struck me about the Reverend Elliott, no matter where I met him in the years later, his first question was, "How's Mum and Dad?" Dad got a promotion and was required to relocate to Belfast. And that wouldn't have been an easy decision for them. They were very fond of Omagh, and they still regularly make return trips to that town. They bought a house in Gilnahirk in East Belfast, and my mum made contact with the Sunday School superintendent of Sandown Road, that was the late Mr. Halliday, about me coming along to Sunday School. Maybe he wished he had said, "No, there's no room," but he said there was room, and that I'd be picked up. And I was picked up by Mr. David McConnell, and that was over 50 years ago. I have to say that I think there's about at least six of us in the back of David's car that day, and that was before seatbelts, etc., and we all crammed in, and I've known David a long time. Mum and Dad have always been there for me, and I've never wanted for anything. They taught me many practical things, but never in a lecturing manner. No doubt my love of board games came from them, but also I think how to be generous in all things in life. The benefits of an annual holiday, I think I've excelled on that one Some people seem to think my life is a holiday, but I'm happy to excel in that one. In many ways, Mum and Dad's quiet example had a very quiet example, but they were never shy about saying well done or an encouraging word. The only really annoying thing about my parents is that they're impossible to buy a lunch or a dinner for. There's always an argument at the till as to who's paying on that occasion. I don't recall much discussion about a choice about attending Sunday school or church. I did plenty of bad things as a child, messing around, but I have very many happy childhood memories. I went to Gilnahirk Primary School. The school was less than 5 minutes' walk, which had a massive influence on my unique approach to school and studying, which was to do all my work at the very last minute to ensure it was fresh. And that involved regular trips down to school in the morning times to pick up my homework book, which had been forgotten the day before. And I have to say that early technique was one I followed through all my school life, college life, and in my bank exams as well. And there are possibly some people here this evening who have worked with me in the bank who would possibly say that applied to my work as well, but I wouldn't pass any comment on that. My brother was born in 1974, and I remember thinking, this will be great, I've got a brother called Daniel, somebody extra now to play football with and cricket, but I hadn't factored in it might be a few years before he'd be any use at those things. I won't comment on just the number of years that actually took. Daniel and I have a special bond. We've enjoyed many great trips, experiences, but more importantly, times of fellowship together. And whilst people that I've worked with in the bank learn to dread the phrase, "I have an idea," Daniel, in fairness, has dealt with this all his life. And he has been a great support and a friend to me. I don't have many memories of schoolwork. I guess looking back, I was a frustrating pupil, as I proved I could pass exams pretty easily, but with actually a bit of effort, my grades would have been a lot better. Qualifying that year in primary school to get to a grammar school place was greatly influenced by the school's decision on your grade. So naturally, Mum and Dad were disappointed that the grade I got wasn't guaranteed a grammar school place. Also, with me being the oldest child, that actually counted against me that particular year. So Mum and Dad decided the best thing they could do would be to pay to send me to Shaftesbury House College. Now, I would be amazed if anybody in this congregation has heard of Shaftesbury House College. It's a small school off Botanic Avenue in Belfast, roughly about 80 pupils in it. So I left Gilnahirk Primary School as the undefeated chess champion and headed to the Big Smoke. But despite me being brought up in a Christian home and hearing the gospel message from faithful Sunday school teachers and on Sunday every week, I don't really recall ever thinking there was some urgent action that I had to take. That changed one night whenever I was 12 years of age. I couldn't tell you what the Reverend McElveen preached on that night, but one thing I couldn't get out of my head, and that was the word eternity. The dictionary defines it as infinite or unending. And I was absolutely clear in my mind that night that if I died, I would spend eternity in hell. You might say to yourself, why did you think that, Robin? I wasn't a bad lad. I was brought up in a very decent home. But as the Bible tells us in Psalm 51, verse 5, "Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me." So that night when I got home, I knelt by my bed and asked the Lord Jesus Christ into my heart. I asked him to forgive me of my sin and to save me. And I remember the peace that I had in my heart that night. That following Sunday, I stayed behind to chat with my Sunday school teacher, Alma, and I told her what had happened, and she was delighted to hear my news. I should say, not knowing the actual date that Sunday was, came back to haunt me and put some doubts in my head later in teenage years, but I will come back to this later. There was a lot to be said about my new school. It was 9 o'clock to 3 with no uniform. There was no facilities for sports. And looking back, I guess I missed out a bit on that. But I have to say there's very few sports that I haven't had a go at in between. I started attending the Youth Fellowship in Sandown Road on a Friday night. Ronnie Whiteside was a youth leader, and I have really lots of fond memories of the green minibus, snowy roads, Christmas parties in the Brickbore Hall, many more of trips to different churches where it was an opportunity to mess around, of course. I do remember, I don't think it was Lisburn, but it was certainly like somewhere down the road, climbing in, going into the men's toilets, and locking the door from the inside, and then climbing out a window. Of course, I thought this was great crack. Hopefully there was nobody in desperation that night. It was there in those meetings and that youth fellowship I met many of my Christian friends who I would spend so many years together with. Some of them I still see very regularly. I have to say, I'll not name names, but looking down, some have lost their hair in those years in between, but I don't think I can be responsible for that loss of hair. Another thing I saw at home was my parents attending the prayer meeting. So as a young teenager, I started attending the weekly prayer meeting. And for those not maybe from a church background, you might be intrigued what goes on in a prayer meeting. But there's a couple of hymns usually sung. The Reverend Martin would do a Bible study, and there's a time, usually 30 minutes or so, where people would pray publicly. I remember being told that the prayer meeting was the hardest meeting in the week to attend and the easiest one to miss. However, very true, Sundays are relatively easy if you're brought up in a Christian home to attend, whereas the prayer meeting requires that little bit of effort. After my O-levels, next stop was River Stanley College, where I took on two A-levels, history and politics, and did those in 1 year. Next, the 2 years spent the college business studies, doing HND and business studies. I did wonder why I did that, but it did prove useful when I joined the bank. I joined the Junior Management Development Program in a marketing stream, and hoped that from that I would lead to some sort of job in marketing. I recall the Reverend Martin saying how much he got paid when he was released, but I don't think I was much better off because I was paid £34 a week. And one of those placements was driving up the Wrights coach builders in Ballymena. So £34 a week didn't put that much petrol in a 950cc Ford Fiesta. I completed a couple of the placements, but I kind of thought it was about time I got a job that actually paid me some money. And bizarrely, I joined the civil service. Never has a job title felt more appropriate. I was a casual clerical assistant. I think the title says it all. From memory, it was a 51-week contract. I was based in Stormont Estate, which was very handy to Gilnahirk. I still remember my first day. I had to go to Rose Park, the building beside Knock Golf Club, to get my photo and my identification. Well, of course, Robin had left a little bit late, and I couldn't find anywhere to park the car. So I abandoned the car outside a porta cabin in the area. And yes, within 10 minutes, there was a security alert about a car that was being parked. And of course, yes, that was my car. So by the time I actually got to my work location in Stormont Buildings, I already had a nickname. I was known as the Blonde Bomber. Yeah. I think Dad spotted in the Friday night Belfast Telegraph. Again, there's some quotes here. The children will not have a clue what I'm talking about. That used to be where Job Finder was, for anybody who remembers that far back. And there was a summer job working in Northern Bank for 4 months. Although it was short term, it felt a better option from what I was doing. But at that stage, I reckon I could have done my day's work in less than an hour. So I got an interview. And I remember actually thinking, well, this is one interview I better not be late for or better not miss. So I had this grand plan that I would catch the bus. That would save me parking the car, etc., etc. I would catch the bus at Gilnahirk. I knew the buses, I knew the times, that would be straightforward. But unfortunately, the bus did not turn up. I wasn't late, the bus simply didn't turn up. What was I to do? I don't think if I'd been late that day, I would have got the job in Northern Bank. But along the Gilnahirk Road, I spied a car that I recognised, and it was the Reverend Samuel Murray's car. He kindly picked me up and drove me into Belfast. And I remember asking him years later, could he remember why he was in the area? But he said he couldn't recall it. But I think it's a little practical example of the Lord's direction in my life. Before I talk more about my banking career, it's important I cover the influence of Christian friends, particularly in my teenage years and in my early 20s. It's always difficult when you start talking about certain names as you leave others out, but the people I'm going to mention here were really important to me during those teenage years. You know, in Proverbs 18:24, it says, a man that hath friends must show himself to be friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. Colin Halliday was one of these friends, going to meetings, playing five-a-side football in Cumber, heading to the Martyrs Memorial for the Easter Convention. Being honest, going to the Easter Convention also gave you a chance to see and spot any talent that was about. I also recall a visiting speaker from America, Dr. Mark Mimick, and he talked about Christians who were saved as children, but maybe couldn't remember the exact date. And certainly that really applied to me that night. And his advice was to look at your life now, and that was the best way to sample check whether you'd got saved. And I took great comfort from that. These were the days of the full works of the Easter Convention. That was the Friday, Saturday, three services on the Monday with lunch provided. You're also guaranteed a lengthy appeal on the Friday night from the late Dr. Ian Paisley. And it was only a case of trying to predict whether he would go with Just As I Am or Where He May Lead Me. Those were definitely the two hymns that were used for the appeals in the years I was there. On one of those Fridays, I did feel under conviction, and I felt compelled to go forward to give up my life in service for full-time work in the Lord's work. I went forward, but nobody contacted me, so I assumed that the Lord's work full-time wasn't for me. Robert McConnell was another friend who I really clocked up the miles with. We went to Scotland, which turned out to be a very important holiday as we met a family called the Bosons and a young lady called Sarah, but that's really Robert's story. But we also managed to get to America and Portugal, and if I was to spend any time talking about those breaks, it could definitely be a very late night. I mentioned knowing Dave McConnell from a very young age. And when Robert and I were knocking about in between our international holidays, I spent a lot of time going backwards and forwards to Cumber. I was always welcome in the McConnell household, and David's late wife, Annie, definitely treated me like an adopted son. I'd hardly be in the door, but the kettle would be on, and Annie, with her beaming smile and great laugh, would always have a word of encouragement for me and chatting away about this and that. When I look back to my younger self, I was greatly blessed to be surrounded by people like that. Then I was on to John and Richard McVeigh, and of course my own brother Daniel. Football, I was still fit enough, but I know it's hard to believe looking at me. I was still fit enough to be playing football regularly, including some church friendlies. I really would like whilst they were friendly, there wasn't too much friendly action about the football at all. But we also played a lot of Premier Manager on the computer, seeking to steer teams from the Conference League into the Premier League. Saturdays became very straightforward as we went along to the Guildford Flame Youth Rally. It must have been possibly the early 90s, possibly 91, 92. When I texted a couple of this crew if they could remember what prompted this, their replies came straight back saying it was to meet new girls. For me, it was purely the spiritual benefit of going along to the meetings. This was our Saturday night routine. Driving to the meeting, chatting with people, hopefully some girls, and then a trip to Portadown to a chippy called the Flying Saucer. And I guess back then people might have said that was appropriate for four spacers. There's so much more I could say about these friends, but I can't due to time. All I would say is it's only later on in life when I look back, I can see the importance of these years. I never knew the taste of alcohol, the drag of a cigarette, what taking drugs were like, or the atmosphere of a nightclub. It's also around this time, guessing roughly 87, 88, when I started attending a church held in the Orange Hall in Cumber at 3 p.m. And when the plans were announced to build a new church in a manse, I got involved in the practical side. And I remember spending a Saturday with the late Dryden Strange putting up a fence at the manse. And I was thinking back to sort of roughly what age I was and what age Dryden was. And I would say Dryden wouldn't be too far off 56. And I thought he was an old fella back then. So all those young ones looking at me, I know exactly now how I felt back then. I really felt at home in Cumber. And so I started attending full time. And so from my perspective, certainly I still have many friends in Sandown Road. And hopefully they feel the same way. But it's certainly hard to believe that was over 35 years ago. Linking back to the comment I made about the Easter Convention and going forward with the Lord's work, one bit of advice I recall was the need to get involved in the various works in your own church. I was already attending the prayer meeting, and I was still young enough to get away with the youth fellowship back in those days. But I tried the children's work and outreach on the men's prayer meeting on a Friday night. I do remember the children's work one night in particular. I had to do the story. Doing the story part wasn't a problem, but I could not draw. And I remember trying to draw Samson between the pillars, and I could not draw Samson's feet. And I remember having to draw a plant pot. That's how bad it was in front of Samson's feet. That's how bad my drawing was. But back to the bank, I'd got a summer cover, and I was placed in Donegal Square North Branch, directly opposite the City Hall. It's now the Tourist Information Office the next time you're in Belfast. It was a large branch with over 40 staff back then. And I remember a phrase that I was known as a yellow pack. And again, for the younger ones, ask your parents about stewards and yellow packs. That phrase was used because we were employed as cheaper labour back then. Prior to this, if you joined the bank, you became a junior bank official. And if you were competent, you became a senior bank official. But that all changed whenever I joined the bank. I went straight on the counter, and I have to say it wasn't easy with all the various different coloured slips of paper for credits and debits. My early memories are the panic of not balancing at the end of the day. And being on a shared till, the very first thing you looked at was what was the running balance. Back then, there was a balance of £50. So basically, if you were over £50 short or over £50 over, you had to go to the manager to get a slip signed off. That wasn't something you enjoyed doing. So regularly, if you're on a shared till, you put a fiver in each out of your own pocket just to avoid the prospect of going to the manager. On another occasion, somebody came in to lift their weekly salary. It was in their account that morning when I checked the system. But back in those days, it was possible to recall salaries. And of course, this is exactly what happened. So effectively, I'd given out money which was recalled. The manager asked me what I was going to do about it. And thankfully, another colleague came with me, and we headed up the Springfield Road, dressed in our suits, in a black taxi, looking for the address of this purported customer. The address did not exist. And my colleague, who remained nameless, said we would try the local post office. There seemed to be an awful lot of people gathered about 11 o'clock in the morning outside a post office for my liking. But I remember him saying to me, whatever you do, you stay in the taxi and keep it here in case I don't come out. I'm not entirely sure what I had done if he didn't come out, but suffice to say, I didn't get that money, and that was a write-off. It was also back then when I went through an extensive lending course, and the assistant manager taught me the three golden rules of bank lending. Firstly, can they repay? Secondly, can they repay? And thirdly, can they repay? I was working away in the bank and attending the Guildford Flame Rally when John McVeigh introduced me to a young redhead who worked for Ulster Bank. As it turned out, the Guildford Flame Rally turned out to be 100% success rate for Daniel and myself because he met Lindsay there as well. Rachel was doing her bank exams, but her approach to studying, let's just say, was a lot different to mine. She set aside two nights of the week. From memory, it was a Tuesday and a Thursday, where I couldn't see her because those were the nights she set aside for studying. And back in those early days, I didn't think it was fitting for me to tell me that I would have maybe spent 2 days, but there was been the 2 days before the exams when I started studying. And Rachel seemed quite impressed. She was easily impressed back in those days that I had already finished my bank exams using my unique approach to studying. Rachel is practical, hardworking, and sensible. But as they say, opposites attract. But it wasn't long before I was heading to South Armagh to visit the Purdy's. I have to be honest with you, driving to Bantam country, as I would have called it, was a very different experience for me. Remember this, I was a fellow brought up in Gunlaherk, was less than a mile from Cherry Valley. South Armagh was a place I saw in the news, and the Purdy's lived on Darkey Road, not too far from the Darkey killings, which had happened just over 40 years ago. I generally stayed over on the Friday night, and the Purdy's were very welcoming, hearing stories about them being involved in a car accident, but the police refusing to come out in case it's set up really warmed your heart about being in South Armagh. These fears were not helped at all in the early hours of a Saturday morning. There'd be a battering at the window, and I thought myself, this is a raid. But no, it was Willie's subtle approach to getting Brian and Sam up for the milking. I always thought Willie should have moved in a double glazing, because how those windows ever survived, I have no idea. I had no farming background, apart from watching all creatures great and small. And one day Willie needed a hand to deliver a calf. I'm assuming it was a calf, because it was a cow I was at. He must have been really desperate because he asked me, and instructions on the farm and from Willie, I would say, wouldn't have been the best. So when Willie said to put my hands in, I did. And then he said, put your elbows in, I did. And finally, when I was up to my shoulders and my face was up against something else, I wish I could tell you what I was doing. But from memory, a calf did come out. No idea how, but it did come out. But there's no doubt that Rachel had been brought up in a godly home, and I was made very welcome indeed. So time went on, and I felt it was time to ask the question, not about the price of milk. I decided on the old-fashioned approach of asking Willie's permission first and buying the ring in advance. That's how brave I was. I had a contact, of course, in the bank for a jeweler's wholesalers in Belfast, and off I went in to buy the engagement ring. Now, I have to be very honest that I did ask the man at the counter, if this didn't work out, could I swap it for a watch? suffice to say, I didn't have to go back for the watch. I whisked Rachel off to London for a romantic proposal, which actually was on the George Jones radio show. But you can ask Rachel more about this. We were married in 1996. Back in the branch, I loved being on the counter, chatting away with customers, and there was always a bit of banter. Some of the stories still bring back many a smile. The culture in the bank started changing with the word sales when it came along, and for many of my senior colleagues, the idea of promoting bank products didn't go down too well. For me, I found it really easy. Things were going well. A new role was advertised, which was a financial advisor. It was more exams, and of course, I tried my tried and tested approach to cramming, and it worked out okay, and I got through those exams. And this new job allowed me to deal with customers on a one-to-one basis. And I enjoyed that role, and I remember meeting a customer I had dealt with before, and he came in, and he said he wanted to speak with me. And I was looking at his accounts, and I saw a few pounds here and there, and thought maybe he wants to invest some more money. But he pulled out of his pocket a large check. And the size of the check was such that he actually said to me, why don't you leave the bank and set up your own business as a financial advisor, and the commission on that check would be your first year's salary. I have to say there was years following, I did look back on that and wish I'd maybe taken him up on that, but I didn't. But it was around 1999 when a new role came out. It was an executive banking manager. Surprise, surprise, I winged the interview, no preparation, and much to my surprise, I got the job. My new role involved managing a portfolio of wealthy customers, And at the time, I felt it was the perfect job for me. I won't go into all the details about that role, but suffice to say, I was struggling very quickly and not enjoying it. Too many reasons to go into, but I remember I started waking up in the middle of the night thinking about work, and that had never happened before in my life. I decided I needed to speak to the senior manager in charge. The meeting didn't go well, and his reply was pretty brutal, and that if I stepped down from this job, he couldn't promise me a job anywhere in the bank. I wasn't long married. I was standing outside the city hall and wondering what to do. I ended up phoning the head of the financial planning area where I used to work and asking him if there was still a job for me. And he said, you could start again on Monday if you want. As it turned out, I wasn't allowed to do that. I had to serve my penance in my old job as the executive banking manager. And I ended up taking a pay cut and a demotion to get out of that job. It was a tough time for me. I was still pretty young, still pretty ambitious, and I kind of wondered really how the bank would work out for me after this. I went back to my old role as a financial planner. I changed location. I was now covering three branches in East Belfast. This proved very handy, as I was a member of Shandon Park Golf Club. And most Fridays in the summer, I had an appointment in my diary for 5 p.m. The customers were called the Greens, and it was all 18 of them. 2001, Joshua was born in July. Remember Rachel going to hospital the day before, and I was working that next morning. I finished up at lunchtime and made my way to the hospital. Things seemed fine, and I recall asking the midwife how long until the action starts. And she said it'd be hours and hours and hours. So I thought I may as well go home and get changed here. But things started happening very quickly. And next thing, the midwife was pushing the red alarm button and offering gas and air. And I said I was fine, but what about Rachel? Benjamin was born in May 2003. And unfortunately, I missed that delivery despite a record drive between Ardmillan and the Ulster Hospital. The boys are very different. And they both give me a lot of fun. Josh is very technically minded, and once he gets into his subject, he's a hard man to keep up with on the detail. Benjamin's always been sporty, and they always advise that a dad should never relive his childhood through his children. But in my case, I didn't have a sporting background, so I was more than happy to follow Benjamin around, doing my best from the side of the football pitch to encourage referees to make the right decision. Mm-hmm. I even took on the role as assistant manager for the 2002 Cumbereck team, but time does not allow me to go into those exploits. I was warned not to say too much about the boys. I am conscious they're both big lads now, and I'm no longer at my fighting weight. But all I would say is I'm glad that they're both saved, and I trust that they know the Lord's continued blessing in their lives. Time moved on. In 2005, I was asked to join a project in head office. The bank had been bought over by Danske Bank, and there was an opportunity to build some new teams. And whilst I had many reservations, friends I trusted in work told me to do it for the experience. It was only going to be 6 months, but as it turned out to be, when I finished up in the branch in August of 2005, that was the last time I worked on a branch. Many people would say I hadn't done much work in that period in the branch anyway, but I'll leave that to them. This eventually led me my first experience managing a small team. It was a team that checked the financial advisor's work, and here we are, we were now checking our colleagues' work. And if anybody is a Star Wars fan, we were referred to as the dark side, because we were checking and finding fault in our colleagues' work. Sometime later, my little team was going to be moved to another area. And wouldn't you know that the head of that other area was the same man that I'd had to go to about stepping down and taking a demotion. As you'd imagine, that was a very difficult circumstance for me. And again, for the sake of time, I felt it was important to clear the air. And I spoke to him and went over the whole experience and how it had left me feeling. In fairness to him, he apologized. He said he hadn't handled the whole thing well. And I will say about that relationship, it was always interesting and never a dull moment. And ultimately I ended up reporting to him, and he was my manager. And I recall sitting opposite him in possibly one of the most prestigious offices in Belfast. And the topic of church came up, as it had many times in the past with him. He knew I was a Christian, and there was a conversation about going to heaven. And he was intrigued why I could be so certain I was going to heaven. My answer was simple, that it was not what I had done, but as what the Lord Jesus Christ had done for me. It must have been around this time when Benjamin was playing football at Cumberrack. I first met Thomas Jackson. He and I struck up a great friendship and enjoyed great conversations while watching the boys play football. I got an opportunity to help Thomas with a project, and I roped Daniel in. He was a willing helper. And you probably need to ask Thomas what he thought back then. Maybe it might take me a while, but that was the start of many projects, many times of fellowship, and possibly too many breakfasts started happening around that time as well. But I've no doubt it was through this friendship that led both to Joshua and Benjamin. I ended up working in the trade, and Daniel, who left the bank, a decision I know he never regretted. Back at the bank, I had effectively worked on a project to do myself out of a job. It was a long story, but I remember being called into a room to discuss my future. And this was now the 2012, and I was being asked to go on a project that was growing arms and legs, and that was a little three-letter project called PPI. Not PPE, in case you're thinking back to COVID, but this was PPI and all those annoying texts and phone calls you used to get. My first reply to this offer was, what were the other options? It wasn't seen as a great project to go. People with no roles ended up in this project, and it had nicknames like the retirement home and God's waiting room. This was the place that I was heading. So with no other choice, I headed off to deal with PPI complaints. God's hand was upon this, and I had the opportunity to work with the two best managers in my career over the next 7 years. Maria was my new line manager. She had a fantastic reputation, and we got on really well. I really enjoyed my years with her, and during that time, we centralized all complaint handling into one team. By 2015, Maria got an opportunity to retire, and the team were on the move to a location outside Dunmurry. I now reported to Wendy, and I'd known Wendy for a number of years. And again, with Wendy, we developed a fantastic working relationships. Involved a lot of tears of laughter, a lot of challenges, and a lot of fun. But she was a fantastic support, and she, like Maria, she got the best out of me and said a lot of very kind things to me, which I don't think I deserved. That led to another promotion, and when I look back at that time period, 2018 to 2019, it was with much fondness. I had great people to work with, and there is a huge difference between a manager and a leader. And it was very strange to sit having a coffee with managers who reported to me while they talked about me and wondered how I got away with so much in terms of people stepping up to do a great job. I like to think what they saw back then was a little of the Lord's influence in my life. Again, far too big a topic for me to try and talk about and possibly one I would get emotional about. By 2019, the deadline for PPI was announced, and it's fair to say things got a little bit busy. I think in the last 3 days of the deadline, we received 2 years' worth of complaints, and we had 70 people working in the team at that stage. By the end of 2020, Wendy was retiring, and that was a very strange time for me personally. Her job was advertised, and I had never prepared for an interview. If you think about it, Evan, I've told you about my approach to school and everything else. This was a very strange experience for me to actually be preparing for an interview. If I had been successful, I'd have moved from managing one team to managing five teams with a headcount of around 150 people. And a verse that meant a lot to me during that time was Isaiah 41:10. It says there, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with my right hand of righteousness." It was during COVID, and although I was still going to the office each day, my interview was held on my kitchen at home. Unfortunately, I finished second. It was also a strange time in the church when I was on duty with Norman and Colin in a meet, greet, and seat role, if you remember back to then. There were two benefits. It was always good fun with Norman and Colin in the door, but I set myself the task of trying to get to know everybody's first name in the church. I will admit I got it wrong from time to time, but I think I need to publicly apologize to Alan Craig, who I call Paul, for a few months. In fairness, nobody corrected me, but apologies to Alan. A few months later, I had an accident on a ladder. I broke my humerus in two places and cracked five ribs, and I was off work for 5 months. I think in the 31 years up to that point, I had been off ill for a total of less than a week. So being off for an extended period felt very strange to me, and not being able to sleep was also very strange. Mum and Dad took on the main responsibility for getting me back and forth to the hospital, and it was great to be able to spend some time with them. I was due to return back to work when I got a text to phone a very senior manager. The long story was I had been asked to return to work and take on the job that I had missed out on. The job had become available again, but to be honest with you, when I was off, I had no intention of applying for that job, as I believed I'd given it the best shot and that door was firmly closed. What I would say is when you're off for a period of time like that, certainly my brain was not working at normal speed, and I took a weekend to mull it over. I guess I wonder, looking back, why the opportunity had come about at that stage. And I was given a deadline of a Tuesday morning to make my decision. Now, some of you know I am Janice's very poor apprentice for the church Facebook page, and my daily task is posting the daily verse. I use an app called Takara each morning, which has a verse and a picture on it. So that Tuesday morning, when I opened up the app, I got all the assurance that I needed that I would take on this opportunity, because the verse that morning was Isaiah 41:10 again. I had nothing to fear because the Lord would be with me. I took that opportunity, and it was a very quick 4 months. There are so many people that I have to thank for their help during my career in banking, but I am sure they know who they are because I've told them before. There's so much more I could say about my upbringing and the importance of supportive parents and Christian friends, but I also need tonight to remember my best friend, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. Life could have taken me on many different directions, but the Lord has guided me, and it's his great love that has got me to this point. Despite the many opportunities that I should have said a word for him, but I didn't, despite the times I've said things that I shouldn't have said, despite my many faults, despite letting many people down, and a general feeling that I am a disappointment considering the blessings that I've enjoyed, but I thank the Lord that despite my weakness, he still loves me. And this evening, as we close, I just want to leave with you a short example of a different man's life story, and that is John Astor IV. For ease, I'm just going to refer to him as John Astor, and you will be pleased to hear this is a very short message. One verse I want to leave with you is found in Mark 8:36. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? His great-grandfather, John Jacob Astor, was an immigrant from Germany who arrived in America with a suitcase of musical instruments. But he was a very shrewd man, and he bought up land in a little place called Manhattan, which later became Times Square. And this man became America's first multi-millionaire. This was the type of lifestyle that John Astor IV was born into in 1864. He enjoyed the finest of things life could offer him. He didn't really have a day job, but he got into building hotels and built the famous Waldorf Astoria and the St. Regis Hotels. He had time for hobbies, writing. He was a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army, an inventor. Money was no object to John Astor. He mixed in all the right circles and would have been a celebrity of his day. He married Eva Shipman in 1891, and they had two children, but the marriage did not last. This was a very different time, and it headline news when he divorced some 18 years later. The scandal was rife when 2 years later he remarried. At this time, Astor was 47, and his new wife, Madeline, was only 18. Astor grew tired of the constant attention and decided the best thing would be to take a long holiday. Remember, for John Astor, money was no object. They traveled extensively through Egypt and Europe, and he hoped that the scandal would have died down since they were out of the country. And this evening, I want to illustrate John Astor's life under three simple headings. The first thing is his fatal decision. After the holiday, it was time to head back home. They traveled to Cherbourg, France, and John Astor paid for a ticket, first class, of course, for himself, for his wife, a separate cabin for his manservant, and another cabin for his wife's nurse, and of course his dog as well. And they went to set sail on a maiden voyage of the most expensive ship ever built. It was a one-way ticket on HMS Titanic. On the face of it, this was a lovely way to return home, but he would have no idea that this would prove a fatal decision. What plans had John? More property deals. I'm sure he was in regular contact via telegram regarding his own business dealings. And when you think about it, on that ship that day, there was such a large difference in price between first class and third class. But everybody started in the same place and they ended up in the same location. And what an illustration of life. We are born, some go on to do financially very well for themselves and very comfortable, others make ends meet. But regardless of how your journey goes, life starts off the same and will end with death. The one unknown fact is when your journey on this earth will end. What about you? Have you plans you wish to complete? The Bible tells us in Luke 12 about a rich farmer. Things were going so well, he had come up with a plan to deal with his increased wealth. He was going to build bigger barns, then he was going to enjoy it. But God said unto him, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee." You see, in preparation, he had not considered his soul and where he would be when he died. Can I ask you this evening, what preparation are you making for that journey beyond death? Let's look quickly, secondly, at his foolish delay. As I already said, Astor was a well-known man. Many people would have pointed him out. Him and his young wife were at headline news. In the aftermath of the disaster, it's interesting to read some eyewitness accounts of what happened when the Titanic was sinking. Astor, was the sort of man who could have a conversation with the captain. And there was reports that he asked the captain the situation. The captain replied, it wasn't good, and that he'd have to use the lifeboats. A number of survivors reported on seeing the Astors about to board lifeboat 7, one of the first to be lowered, but they turned back. Lily Potter was quoted as saying that she saw them as they rowed away. They had declined to be taken off, claiming it was safer on the big liner than in the cockle shells amid the floating ice. They simply would not believe there was any danger. Astor did not see the danger. He did not want to accept that this great ship would sink. He thought the damage was slight. He did not realize how little time he had. Can I ask you this evening, have you ever considered how much time you have left? You know, during the gospel mission a few months ago in June, I invited a number of people to come along. People I thought maybe would attend because I know them a long time. And one of the replies I got by text, I haven't been able to forget, because the reply said, "I don't think it's for me." I have to tell you this evening, it is for you. John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." That whosoever is for you, you can put your name right in there. There's no other way, there's no other means of escape. And just like John Astor, his only escape was the lifeboat, but he turned it away. It wasn't for him. When John Astor finally realized the danger, it was too late for him. As he helped his young wife in the lifeboat 4, which was the last of the lifeboats to get away, he asked the second officer if he could come aboard and protect his wife. However, the second officer was following the strict instructions of women and children first at that point. On Lifeboat 7, the same, a different officer had not been as strict because of a lot of panic and people didn't know what they were doing, and many of the lifeboats left half empty. Perhaps others felt like John Astor, surely this great ship is safe. What are you trusting in this evening? Is it because you're a decent person? You know, during my career in the bank, I've met a lot of decent people. I've met a lot of decent customers. But decency won't get you into heaven. God has prepared the only way, and that is through the Lord Jesus Christ. Well, John Astor had influence. He had all the world, all the money that the world could offer him. He could have offered anybody in Lifeboat 4 $1 million for their place. But what use would that money have been to them? Lastly, his final outcome. Estimates are that when Lifeboat 4 left the Titanic, that the ship went down in 30 minutes. And Astor was last seen on the deck smoking a cigarette. It's interesting to note that passengers on board ships back then were referred to as souls. For those who did not get into a lifeboat, they would have died either going down with the ship or in the icy waters. You know, we live in a society today that cries out for respect for every belief, for every set of values, that everyone is entitled to their own view. Yet when death comes, what next? Over the years, we have created so many ways to divide or identify people. Jews, Muslims, Protestants, Catholics, hundreds of ways people want to be identified. But death is that great equalizer. Hebrews 9:27 says, "And as is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment." Back in the days, following the disaster, of course, there was no internet, no 24-hour news. It was a very different age of communication. Over the next days, bodies were recovered from the sea. John Astor's body was one of those that was recovered. They were able to identify his body by, of course, he had his initials engraved on his clothing. On his body, they found much wealth, notes in different currencies, a gold watch, many other valuable personal items. And to put it into today's terms, he had over £100,000 on his person. That was just pocket change to John Astor. Well, in terms of the verse we read, John Astor had, humanly speaking, gained the whole world. But what use was it when death came? If there was ever a true example that you cannot take it with you. The estimates of John Astor's wealth at the time were around $80 million. In today's money, that's around $3 billion. Loved ones and those interested gathered each day outside the White Star Line offices there in Liverpool, where two large boards were situated. Crowds gathered each day to watch a representative of the White Star Line post the names up on one of two boards. There was no breakdown of the class, whether they're first, second, or third. How people were identified was very simply. Ultimately, these lists were the only ones that mattered, and they had two simple headings: no one to be saved, or no one to be lost. Yes, no one to be saved, or no one to be lost. Right now, this very evening, you are on one of those lists. Can I ask which one are you on? John Astor's name went up on the board, no one to be lost. Can I ask you this evening, are you saved or are you lost? Just in finishing, for those who were saved, it's because they accepted the means of salvation that night, that being from the lifeboat. John Astor had delayed. He had the opportunity to escape, but he refused, and when time ran out for him. Can I ask, have you given thought to your own soul? Have you considered the need to make preparation? You know, it's such a simple thing to do. The same thing I did at my bedside that night. In Romans chapter 10 and verse 9, that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shalt believe in thine heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. Oh, tonight you have opportunity. You could get saved this very night. I'd like to thank you for